at 11 p.m.
CBS News. President Nixon heads for the Middle East in a matter of hours. There are mixed feelings about the trip. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The president says his swing through five Middle Eastern nations is a very important journey, but some of the president's critics say it's impeachment diplomacy, an effort by the president to take the spotlight off Watergate. Republican Senator Edward Brooke of Massachusetts says the trip is patently political, but Vice President Ford says the president's critics are wrong.
We hear from some that he's only going for public relations purposes and that nothing will be achieved. I prefer to believe that he will make another breakthrough in the search by humanity for a new world order based on human compassion, imagination, and cooperation. And that'll be good for all of us in this new attempt to find broader brotherhood.
Ford spoke in Cleveland at a meeting of the National Conference of Christians and Jews. More news after this message.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablets?
No, sinus medicine. Sinus tablets. Helps the headache and the pressure.
Oh, you mean sign-off.
Exactly.
Headache pain is one thing. A sinus headache is something else. Sometimes your whole face can seem to throb with pain. You want relief. Take sign-off tablets. S-I-N-E-O-F-F. The sinus medicine that gives you a full dose of pure aspirin plus a sinus drainer. Sign-off, the sinus medicine that helps relieve sinus pain while you drain. And Sign-off doesn't stop there. Have you tried Sign-off sinus spray, the fastest known form of sinus congestion relief? It works in seconds. That's Sign-off sinus spray. When sinus flares up, use Sign-off tablets and spray only as directed.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign-off.
Exactly.
Sign-off, the sinus medicines in the bright red box.
Some major court decisions regarding the Watergate case may come this week while President Nixon is out of the country. Once again, President Nixon says he's determined to remain in office until his term expires in 1977. The president spoke yesterday to about 1,400 of his supporters at a luncheon meeting in Washington. Several other speakers accused the news media of conducting a trial against the president. After less than a month in power, the new French government has lost its first important member. Peter Kalischer reports from Paris.
Cabinet Minister Jean-Jacques Servan-Schreiber, a center reformist, was fired from the government for making a statement protesting France's imminent nuclear weapons test in the South Pacific. According to government sources, it will be the last French nuclear test in the atmosphere. The dismissal came after a long meeting between Prime Minister Jacques Chirac and President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. Said Chirac, the views expressed by Jean-Jacques Servan-Schreiber are incompatible with the basic principles of our own policy. JJSS, as he is known, was made Minister of Administrative Reform less than a month ago in a move to broaden the base of President Giscard d'Estaing's majority. In a statement carried on French national radio and television, Servan-Schreiber said he had been opposed to holding the tests last year and still felt the same way. Peter Kalischer, CBS News, Paris.
The Associated Press reports that heroin traffic in the United States is on the upswing again after a two-year decline. AP says federal drug enforcement officials report that Mexico is replacing Europe as the primary source of the U.S. heroin supply, with heroin being refined from poppies grown in western Mexico. In a report to the United Nations, some 20 economic experts expressed concern over what they term subversive activities by multinational corporations. As an example, the panel cites actions by International Telephone and Telegraph in Chile. The report says such actions can only bring discredit to the business community and negatively affect the image of corporations. Now this.
It's a real hot day. I'm soaking up the sun, and suddenly I say antifreeze right out loud. My wife says, huh? And I say, haven't you heard that song?
You can never buy Prestone too early. Do it now, don't you wait. You can never buy Prestone too early. You can only buy it too late.
It's a fact. A 50-50 mix of Prestone 2 winter summer formula and water, about 2 gallons for most cars, fights boilover because it helps your cooling system handle heat better than water. Fresh boilover protection and fresh corrosion protection, too, because only Prestone 2 has a patented silicone silicate inhibitor system. Nothing beats it for corrosion protection. Summer, winter, spring, or fall, you can never buy Prestone too early. You can only buy it too late.
If you can't trust Prestone,
who can you trust?
Humor columnist Art Buchwald Sunday gave the commencement speech at Miami University in Ohio. As expected, Buchwald treated the graduates to his brand of humor. Poking fun at President Nixon, Buchwald said, "Don't get me wrong, I worship the very quicksand he walks on." Buchwald also gave the class of 74 some advice. He said, "The older generation has given you a perfect world, so don't do anything to mess it up." Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI, where the time is 6 minutes past 11.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sound of suspense. Welcome to the fear you can hear. Welcome to the world of terrifying imagination. The subject of the story you're about to hear is murder. But the subject is also time. We've all heard of killing time. But have you heard about using time to kill? You will in the next few minutes when Mr. Owen Layton himself tells you his most ingenious scheme for getting rich quick by means of sudden death.
Owen, for heaven's sake, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in Paris.
I thought I'd surprise you, Harriet, and I seem to have done exactly that. By the way, I met your charming dance instructor coming out of the house. Although I'm quite sure he didn't see me.
But I don't understand. How could you possibly have returned home so soon?
I was in a terrible hurry to see you, darling. I simply couldn't wait to see you and do this.
Oh, oh, no!
Our mystery drama, Sea of Troubles, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Stotz Cotsworth. It is sponsored in part by New Sugar-Free Diet 7-Up and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablets?
No, sinus medicine. Sinus tablets. Helps the headache and the pressure.
Oh, you mean sign-off.
Exactly.
Headache pain is one thing. A sinus headache is something else. Sometimes your whole face can seem to throb with pain. You want relief. Take sign-off tablets. S-I-N-E-O-F-F. The sinus medicine that gives you a full dose of pure aspirin plus a sinus drainer. Sign-off. The sinus medicine that helps relieve sinus pain while you drain. And sign-off doesn't stop there. Have you tried sign-off sinus spray, the fastest known form of sinus congestion relief? It works in seconds. That's sign-off sinus spray. When sinus flares up, use sign-off tablets and spray only as directed.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign-off.
Exactly.
Sign-off. The sinus medicine's in the bright red box.
What the Marines are looking for. A few good college men who want to lead. Men who have enough on the pole to be eligible for PLC, Platoon Leaders Class. Not everyone can make it. It takes brains. It takes muscle. And summer training is no picnic. It takes takes men who want a real challenge. A challenge of leading Marine ground troops, flying sophisticated Marine aircraft, or serving as Marine lawyers. If you're one of the few who can make it, there's financial assistance available during school. Up to $2,700 over 3 years. There's even free civilian flying lessons for qualified men. PLC Ground, PLC Air, PLC Law, for a few good men.
Our spine tingler begins across the sea, in the delightful city of Paris. They say that you can sit at a sidewalk cafe in one of these streets and sooner or later meet everyone you've ever known. Well, now we're going to introduce you to someone who you don't know, but whose acquaintance you'll enjoy making. His name is Owen Layton, and he prefers to tell you his unusual story in his own words.
I arrived in Paris at 10 o'clock that morning, but I didn't leave my hotel room until well after 4. I knew my brother Gerald's habits only too well. He'd probably be sleeping until noon. I knew where he would be at 4 p.m., of course, at Patrick's Cafe on the Rue de Montparnasse. Everyone loved Gerald at Patrick's because he was famous for always paying his bills. With my money, of course.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour. I chose a table well to the side, but my appearance still attracted considerable attention. And why not? With my rumpled English tweeds, a long gray beard, and the style of Ulysses S. Grant, a pair of crutches to keep my monstrously bandaged foot off the Parisian asphalt, well, I must have been quite a sight. Garçon, un pernod, s'il vous plaît.
Très bien, monsieur.
Well, what do you know, Owen, for the love of Pete?
Hello, Gerald. I'm glad you were able to recognize me under all this hair and bandages.
Well, how are you?
What's the matter with your foot?
Oh, never mind about that. Give me a look at you. I haven't seen my kid brother in over a year. You know something? You look more French than ever.
Ah, yeah, come on now. Let's hear about that foot, Owen.
And the beard.
When did you grow all that shrubbery, huh?
Well, I got the idea from you. Last time I was in Paris.
This thing?
Yeah.
Nah, this is nothing compared to you. Now, listen, the last time I saw a beard like that, it was on a $50 bill.
Yes. I guess it got a little out of hand. I'm thinking of trimming it, as a matter of fact. More like your style.
Well, I'll introduce you to my barber.
Hey, do me a favor, Gerald. Finish this Pernod for me. I shouldn't be drinking with my foot.
Well, what's your foot got to do with this?
It's the gout. You remember, I wrote you about it a few months ago. I had an attack just before I sailed for Europe. Well, how's your painting coming along? You sold anything yet?
The only thing I sold is my watch, as if you didn't know.
Yes, I know. You came to Paris to starve in a garret. But you look pretty well fed to me.
Speaking of that, how was Harriet, huh?
Speaking of which, the money I sent you or being well fed?
Oh, you know what I mean. Oh, and how is she? Still the same?
No. She's more of the same. She's richer than ever. And she's fatter than ever. She's also meaner than ever.
Well, she couldn't be too mean. I mean, not if she lets you grow that beard. I still don't see why you wanted to grow it. You always made such fun of mine.
Well, I had my reason, Gerald. It was part of my plan.
Plan? What plan?
Why, to kill my mean, fat wife.
Of course.
So, this is your garret, is it? Pretty luxurious for a starving artist, isn't it?
It's not bad.
Yeah, and all those canvases. Some even have paint on them. Well, don't tell me you're really working.
I know you're no saint, but I don't think you're wicked enough to do what you said.
Strangle Harriet? No, Gerald, I'm wicked enough, just not foolish enough. My wife's money will be precious little good to me in prison.
Now, don't tell me you've got some kind of a foolproof scheme, Owen, because there is no such thing.
Sit down.
And now, no matter how clever you are, there's always someone cleverer.
In the detective novels, perhaps. Now, sit down before I kick you with my gouty foot. I've got 5 pounds of bandage there. It makes quite a weapon.
I don't understand what you meant about gout.
is the very cornerstone of my plan. I have established a medical history of the disease, if questions arise later.
Questions?
Yes, about the bandages.
Owen, I have never seen you like this. You're really talking wildly. Now, those crutches, the beard, all this crazy talk about killing people.
It's not crazy at all. It's a beautiful, rational scheme. And one that you will be eager to see succeed.
Owen, what's happened between you and Harriet?
Well, nothing sudden. It's been a gradual change. Perhaps the inevitable result of advancing years. You know, I was considerably younger than Harriet when we married. Now it seems I'm not young enough.
Now, wait a minute. Are you cutting me off? Are you going to stop sending me money?
Nothing of the kind. As long as my income can support it, you can continue to develop your artistic talents. The question is, how long will my income continue? It's been 10 years since I married Harriet. The difference between our ages is suddenly not so great. Harriet is discovering that there are younger men in the world. In fact, there's one particular one she's fond of.
You're joking.
He's a dancing instructor, as a matter of fact. She met him when I had my first attack of gout. I couldn't move for a month while Harriet indulged herself in non-domestic pleasures like dancing.
What to talk about? Killing her?
Killing her carefully, Gerald. With due regard to the risks involved. Actually, I thought of the answer when I was flat on my back. I had plenty of time to think then.
About what?
A unique phenomenon of the modern age. The magnificent paradox of transoceanic travel.
Travel?
Yes. A ship makes its journey in some 5 days. A jet plane takes only a few hours.
But you hate planes. You've never been on a plane in your life.
Yeah, that's right. They terrify me.
But what does all this have to do with killing Harriet?
Everything. For you and I, brother, are going to put that transatlantic paradox to use. We're going to prove that the difference between a ship and a plane is a lovely way to commit murder. It was almost 2 weeks later that Gerald and I stood on the dock at Le Havre and looked at the trim lines of the SS Empress. She wasn't exactly the largest vessel lying at anchor, but on that particular Saturday, she was certainly the busiest. That was fine with me. The more excitement on the pier, the less noticeable Gerald and I were as we made our way toward A deck. Our progress was slow, since I never really managed to use those crutches. Finally, we made our way to stateroom G, and as the door finally shut behind us, I collapsed on the bunk. I looked at my younger brother's face and felt considerably better. Poor Gerald. His complexion was so pale white against his reddish beard, now fuller by 2 barbarous weeks. Relax, Gerald. Everything's going to be all right.
Well, I wish I had your confidence, Owen.
Now let's take care of the passports first, and then we can call the steward.
All right. Here they are.
Ah, good. Now, we have to do this very carefully. With infinite patience, I set about the delicate task of removing the small photographs from both passports. I was as precise as a jeweler. Then I squeezed glue from a tiny tube and replaced them. One bearded face substituted for the other one. Yes, my brother and I looked quite a bit alike, despite the 6-year difference in our age.
Owen, are you sure nobody will notice? Now, you're not supposed to tamper with these passports.
Yes, that's true. And I understand it's also a crime to kill someone. Nevertheless, that's exactly what I plan to do. Now, let's ring for the steward.
All right.
The man who answered our ring was a perfect delight. An aging cockney with a thin crest of white hair, the mouth of a pixie, and the squinty eyes of a myopic. The latter, of course, was going to be a blessing.
Oh, everything all right, Mr. Layton?
Yes, everything's just fine. Your name, Mr. Pawkins?
Yes, sir, that's me. Sir Pawkins, at your service.
Well, Mr. Pawkins, I'm afraid I'm going to be something of a burden to you on this voyage. As you see, I'm an invalid.
Oh, Yes, sir, your poor foot, sir.
Exactly, my poor foot. As a result, I'm going to be forced to take all my meals in here. So you'll have to arrange matters with the dining steward. I trust that can be arranged.
Oh, yes, sir. Don't you worry none about that, sir.
Ah, good. Nor will I be spending any time on deck. The least bit of roll is extremely painful for me. So I'll remain in my stateroom until we reach port.
What a pity, sir.
Oh, it's all right. It's all right. I've got a great deal of business to take care of between here and New York. I'll have enough paperwork to keep me busy. So if you'll just bring me my meals and keep me from being disturbed, you'll be doing your job handsomely. All right? Understood?
Oh, yes. Understood, Mr. Layton.
See you later then, Mr. Pawkins.
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, we were lucky. He seems like a cooperative old geezer.
Yes, but be careful. Always keep your door locked so he can never enter without knocking. And every time he brings you that tray, make sure that you're either dozing or buried in papers. You understand?
Understood.
Yeah.
Well, when I think about what you're going to do in New York while I'm on board the ship, I guess.
Well, what I'm going to do in New York is going to be a pleasure.
But you're so cold-blooded about it, Owen. You are going to kill a human being.
No, I never said that. I said I was going to kill Harriet.
There she is in her lavish New York townhouse, thinking about nothing but her dancing lessons, while aboard the SS Empress, two men are plotting her demise. Of course, we're not yet certain how Owen Layton plans to get away with murder. Even if he does fly to New York and his brother sails in his place, we'll simply have to wait until I continue shortly with Act Two.
Somebody's been drinking my sugar-free diet 7-Up, and it's all gone.
Well, actually, I saved a little.
Oh, a bear!
Hiya, Goldie. What's brewing?
That's Miss Goldilocks to you.
Oh, come on, kid. You mean you don't remember me? The cottage, the three chairs, the porridge?
Baby bear!
In the fur. Been a long time, Goldie.
But baby bear...
Just call me BB.
You drank all the sugar-free diet 7-Up, and I have to conduct another diet drink taste test today.
Well, yeah, I saw the sign on the door, a professional taste tester, huh?
But how can I conduct my taste test now?
Why bother? I tried those other diet drinks, too. You'll notice there's still plenty of them around. Why not ask me?
Well, okay, BB. Tell me. Why did you drink all the sugar-free diet 7-Up?
I like the taste. Light, fresh, natural, sugar-free diet 7-Up is definitely unbearably delicious.
Mm-hmm.
The trick to gift-giving is deciding what to give. Sony brings you the Problem Solver. A Sony component music system. Up to 13 methods of sound reproduction, all integrated into one beautiful hardwood cabinet. So whatever the gift occasion, grad, dad, or wedding, there's a Sony component music system to match it. Not to mention your pocketbook.
The Music Bar at 117 South Sound Center in Olympia is your full-line stereo compact theater. Bob Finch and his sales staff will personally demonstrate their wide range of Sony compact stereo systems when you visit the store. When it's a Sony system, music in stereo or quad is a very enjoyable experience.
Now let's return to Stateroom G on A deck of the SS Empress. It's almost sailing time. The first all visitors ashore warning has been sounded on all levels of the great ship. But in Stateroom G, of course, the warning has a special significance, because now the visitor has become the passenger, and the passenger has become the visitor. But let Mr. Owen Layton speak for himself.
Listen to me, Gerald. Listen very carefully.
For Pete's sake, Owen, we've been over this 100 times.
But now I'm saying it for the last time. You must do exactly what I've said. Exactly. The smallest variation can cause total disaster.
Oh, I promise you. I won't move from the stateroom. I'll be a good little rabbit in my cage.
Yes, it's exactly what worries me. Your rabbit-like tendencies.
Don't expect me to enjoy it. When I think of all those cute little bunnies strolling around on the decks.
Oh, just forget they're there, understand? Let me get this bandage off my foot. Now.
Oh, 5 days. And don't forget the 6 nights.
You'll manage, all right.
Won't be any fun, Owen.
Yes, and neither would it be any fun to fill gas tanks in Hoboken. Not as much fun as living on the left bank with those Parisian beauties of yours.
All right, I know.
And don't forget who's really doing the hard work, Junior. Including that plane trip tonight. Oh, for me, that's the worst part of it all. Listen, how high do those buddy things fly?
Oh, 30,000 feet, I think.
Oh, it's preposterous. There, the bandage is off now. Now, let's get them on you. By the time the next all ashore sounded, the transformation had been made. The bandages were on my brother's foot, and the crutches were lying snugly beside his bunk, and I was all set to leave. With Gerald's gray tweed coat belted around me, with Gerald's hat on my head, I strolled to the visitor's gangplank and left the SS Empress to its business. It was fortunate that I dreaded air travel so much. The thought of being carried aloft some 30,000 feet inside the monstrous machine parked at the Gate 7 on Orlick Field was completely engrossing. For this reason, I overcame any nervousness I might have had upon confronting the immigration authority. The official merely glanced at the photograph in my passport book, snapped it shut briskly, and handed it back. Mr. Gerald Robin Layton was on his way back home. I don't recall much about the flight. I remember about 10 minutes of sheer terror when we took off on what seemed like a ridiculously short runway. I know there were several more hours of alternating fright, numbness, and drowsiness, helped by liberal amounts of alcohol. And then there was that agonizing half hour following the captain's announcement of our approach into Kennedy International Airport. And wonder of wonders, I was safe. The only one in danger was my wife. It was midnight in New York when I climbed into a taxi and gave the driver our destination, Grand Central Station. In the terminal, I deposited my single piece of luggage in a public locker and took still another taxi to the street where Harriet and I had spent the last 4 years of our marriage. The brownstone was an imposing building from the exterior, but Harriet's money had made it possible to scoop out the interior and transform it into a duplex of cunningly modern design. I had spent several happy hours in this house. About 7 or 8, I think. It was 1:20 in the morning by the time I arrived, and the traffic had gone from the quiet streets of Sutton Place. The street was empty. The shades of the buildings opposite had all been drawn against the night. I felt certain that no one saw me quietly insert the key into the lock of the front door. I went quietly upstairs to the bedroom. It was empty. But that was no surprise. It was Saturday night. Presumably, I was in Paris. Therefore, Harriet was on the town, probably in the company of her dance instructor friend. In a way, I was glad that she was running true to form. It helped me feel justified in taking the drastic course that I was about to take. About 20 minutes later, I heard the front door opening again.
Oh, my feet. You danced my little tootsies off tonight. You Fred Astaire, you...
Well, that's what you're paying me for, Mrs. Layton.
Oh, that's what you think, lover.
Well, speaking of...
Oh, no, stop it now, Douglas. No, stop it, you brute.
You mean I don't even get a kiss goodnight?
Oh, tomorrow night, maybe. Right now, I just... I want to go to sleep.
I thought you looked a bit preoccupied tonight. Is anything wrong?
No. Unless you count a cable from my husband.
Well, he's still in Paris, isn't he?
He sailed on the Empress. He'll be here in another 5 days.
Well, that's too bad.
Isn't it? He can stay tomorrow, all right?
I'll count the hours. Good night, my princess.
Good night.
And then... Harriet started up the stairs. I picked up the pretty blue vase that adorned her dressing table and placed it behind my back. Hello, Harriet.
Oh, and for heaven's sake, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in Paris.
I thought I'd surprise you, darling. I seem to have done exactly that.
But your cable, You said you were taking the Empress. She won't arrive for days.
Well, actually, I changed my mind about taking the ship. I flew instead.
You? You were never inside a plane in your life.
No, there's always a first time, isn't there? For everything.
But why? When you're so terrified of flying.
Because I was in a hurry, darling. I simply couldn't wait to see you and do this. Shame about the vase. It cost a small fortune. The really distasteful part came now. As you may have gathered, I'm a man of fastidious taste. But when you have 5 days to lose, you can't afford the niceties. I knew it would be easier to lose myself in a region of the city where the lower depths are at their lowest. And so I discarded my British suit, my Italian loafers, and my continental manners. In an old pair of slacks and heavy wool shirt, I made my way to the Bowery. My first act was to join a shambling, silent line of vagrants outside the clothing relief agency. And I emerged with a costume superior to anything I could have invented. A moth-eaten sweater, a double-breasted jacket with a shredded lining, and 1,000 unironable creases. And then I bought a bottle of Sauterne for 98 cents and rented a bed in a hotel called Miller's for 75 cents a night. And then, the next day, in a steam-filled diner where the coffee tasted like antiseptic, I picked up a mud-stained newspaper from the dirty tile floor. There on the second page was an item which gave me an appetite, even in that place. It said, "Woman found murdered in East Side brownstone." Ah, but the smaller headline beneath it was even more delicious. It read, "Dancing teacher held as suspect." It wasn't something I planned or expected, but, well, why not? Why not? Say, I think I'll have some more of that coffee. And then the 5 days were over. It wasn't very far from the Miller Hotel to the docks. The first glimpse I had of the Empress' beautiful bow on the horizon thrilled me in a way I had never known before. But I couldn't stand about and admire it. I had things to do. I made my way, as unobtrusively as possible, back to Grand Central Terminal. I removed my luggage from the locker, and then in the washroom, I shaved and changed into clean clothes. Then I went down to Pier 16 to greet the arriving Empress. I knew that Gerald would be among the last of the passengers to appear. But then, there he was, wearing my green plaid topcoat with a collar pulled around his throat, wearing my Homburg hanging low over his eyes. He was using my crutches, too, and not very well. But with his foot so heavily bandaged, he still made a convincing cripple.
Owen! Owen! Over here!
Sure. You know, for a minute, I didn't think you'd make it.
Well, how was it? How did everything go?
Fine. Look, where can I get rid of these crutches? They are killing me.
Never mind the crutches. What about the steward, Mr. Pawkins? Did you see him before you left the ship?
No, I managed to avoid him. I didn't even tip him either, just as you said.
Good.
Now get into that car.
This isn't your car, is it?
It's a rental car. Now get inside so we can switch clothes.
A rental car? Well, weren't you taking a chance?
I rented it in your name, Junior. Don't worry about it.
You really thought of everything. Owen, I have to give you credit.
Now, just give me my clothes and that bandage. And fast. And so we made the switch, as before. By the time I stepped out of the rented automobile, I was dressed in the Homburg and the green plaid coat. And the bandages were back where they had originated. In fact, the crutches seemed like old friends as I hobbled back to the entrance of Pier 16. I spotted the ship's petty officer emerging from the passenger exit.
Pardon me, sir.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, it's rather embarrassing. You see, there's a steward that I meant to take care of before I left my stateroom. He was very kind to me.
What's his name?
Pawkins. He's an old fellow. Very nice. I hated to miss him when I left, but somehow I did in all the excitement.
Old Mr. Pawkins was more than pleased when I handed him the two $50 bills. There were actually tears in his eyes.
Oh, this is most generous of you, sir. Most generous.
Well, you took very good care of me, Pawkins. I know I was a nuisance.
Oh, no, sir, you were never. Well, I hardly even saw you, sir.
Well, still, you brought me all my meals and so forth, didn't you? Hmm?
Well, I was glad to do it, sir, glad to be of service. And I hope you'll be back on the Empress with us soon again.
I intend to be, Pawkins. Yes, you can be sure of that. As soon as I knew that Mr. Pawkins was remembered properly, and that he remembered me properly, I knew that everything was going to be just fine. I told my younger brother to drive his new car to the village, find himself a small apartment, and lay low. Then I took a taxi to my home. I knew there would be company waiting for me.
Mr. Layton?
Yes, I'm Owen Layton. Who are you?
My name is Lieutenant Farley, Mr. Layton, New York Police Department.
Police? What's the matter? My house been robbed or something?
I'm sorry we couldn't meet you at the ship. We knew you were coming back today, but we thought it would be easier to meet you here. And break the news to you.
What news? What are you talking about?
Bad news, I'm afraid. Maybe we better go inside.
Yes, come in. Of course, I knew exactly what the bad news was going to be. Now all I had to do was to keep from laughing out loud.
We seem to have been witness to the perfect murder. Owen Layton can't be blamed for the murder of his wife, and for the most natural reason in the world. Owen Layton wasn't in New York when his wife was murdered. Owen was on the high seas. Just ask Mr. Pawkins or anyone else aboard the SS Empress. But before we congratulate Mr. Layton on his cleverness, why don't we wait until I return with Act 3?
And now another story of the ball and chain as Kellogg's Special K presents Veronica and Jeff.
Oh, Jeffrey, isn't this romantic? Out in a quiet lake at night with you rowing the boat.
Yes, Veronica, it's really neat.
Jeffrey, what was that?
Frogs.
Frogs that go bonk?
They're pretty weird frogs.
Oh, Jeffrey, you're such a car. You have a ball and chain like the ones they use in those Special K commercials.
Yes, Veronica, it symbolizes my few pounds of extra weight. But I'm going to get rid of it.
How?
By exercising. You know, like rowing this boat and eating smart at every meal, starting with a Special K breakfast.
You mean a 1 ounce bowl of high protein Special K, 4 ounces of skim milk, orange juice, and coffee?
Precisely. It's less than 240 calories, and it tastes delicious. It'll help me get rid of this ball and chain.
I'll help too, Jeff. After all, we're all in the same boat.
You have a ball and chain too.
Your happy ending could begin with a Special K breakfast from Kellogg's.
The trick to gift-giving is deciding what to give. Sony brings you the Problem Solver. A Sony portable TV. Wide variety to choose from. In color or black and white. AC/DC portables with power packs from mini to 11-inch. Whatever the gift occasion,
grab, dad, or wedding, there's a Sony portable TV to match it. Not to mention your pocketbook.
The Music Bar, 117 South Sound Center in Olympia, is your full-line Sony television dealer. Bob Finch and his sales staff are real outdoor enthusiasts. They know what Sony portable TV sets can do for folks who work and play in the Northwest environment. It's a nice way to enjoy the great outdoors or the many moods of Mother Nature.
Owen Layton is a happy man today. Despite the fact that he is all alone in the reconverted brownstone on Sutton Place, the smile never seems to leave his face. Even as he hobbles towards the front door to answer the insistent chimes, his bandaged foot and crutches don't seem to bother him in the least. In fact, one has the impression that despite the tragic loss of his wife, Mr. Layton will never let anything bother him for the rest of his life.
Evening, Mr. Layton.
Oh, hello, Lieutenant. I didn't know you were coming by tonight.
Oh, it's all right, I hope.
Yes, of course. Come in.
Oh, thank you. You were a bit too broken up the other day when we had a talk about, well, about that terrible thing that happened to your wife.
Well, I'm sure you don't blame me, Lieutenant. It was a great shock. Here, let me take your raincoat. Raining outside, is it?
Yeah, a little. Frankly, it was my decision not to send a radiogram to the ship. About your wife's death, I mean. It didn't seem right to break the news to you that way.
Well, that was very considerate of you, Lieutenant.
We knew you were aboard the Empress because of your cable.
Yes. But you were right not to tell me when I was aboard. It would have been very a helpless feeling, knowing that there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. At any rate, I suppose you've had some time to, think about what may have happened.
No, Lieutenant. The truth is, I still don't understand. That man who killed her, what was his name again?
Douglas Denton.
Oh, yes.
Not his real name. He called himself that at the dancing school, but he was born Bernard Eubank. I take it you didn't know Mr. Denton.
No, I never met the man before in my life. And why would he want to kill my poor Harriet?
Well, actually, he's still denying that he did.
Well, how can he? From what I read in the newspaper, well, you seem to have caught him red-handed.
Well, no, not quite that good. We knew that he'd been, he and your wife had been seeing each other during your visit abroad, and that they'd seen each other that Saturday night she was killed. In fact, he was seen in the vicinity of your house by several witnesses, not more than 10 minutes from the time when we estimated that she was bludgeoned to death. I'm sorry, that's a little too graphic, I know.
It's all right, Lieutenant. I want to know the details. I really do.
Well, the one detail we don't know is why he would have done such a thing. I mean, frankly, we have Mr. Denton pegged as a rather small-time, gigolo. Sorry to tell you that, too.
Oh, it's all right. I'm sure Harriet wasn't to blame. I'm sure that man just did whatever gigolos did and made a fool of her.
Well, did your wife do that sort of thing often?
I don't know. I suppose she's made a few mistakes. Which of us hasn't?
Well, now, if you could be more specific...
No, Lieutenant. I'm sorry. I want Harriet's killer punished, Lieutenant Farley, but not at the expense of scandalizing my wife.
I'm afraid that scandal won't be easy to avoid. We know she was having an affair with Mr. Denton. He's admitted that himself. But that don't give him any reason to break a vase over her head.
Yes. Unless she had decided to end the affair, of course.
Well, it's one possible theory, of course.
Didn't you say you found my cable to her about coming home on the Empress?
Yeah, that's right.
Harriet didn't know I expected to return from Europe so soon. Perhaps when she informed her friend, Mr. Denton, he got angry.
Yeah, that's possible, too.
He might have just acted impulsively. Yes, Lieutenant. I'm sure it happened just that way. They quarreled.
In your bedroom?
Very well, in our bedroom, yes. They quarreled. And he picked up the vase and he struck her. But somehow, I can't believe it was cold-blooded or premeditated.
No matter what the man is, Lieutenant, I hope the law isn't too harsh with him. I'll tell you what wasn't easy. It was the waiting. I had to wait for the outcome of two legal actions, the verdicts of both the criminal and the probate courts. But I had every confidence that human and fiscal justice would be done. And then, one night, a little more than 2 weeks after my return... Hello?
Owen, it's Sheila.
I beg your pardon?
It's Sheila. God, I feel terrible not calling you before this, but I just found out what happened. I read the whole thing in the paper. A back issue. Oh, and you, poor thing, you must be in a state.
Are you sure you're calling the right number?
Oh, of course I am. At least that's the number in the telephone book. 815-5555.
Well, you certainly have the right number, miss, but I believe you have the wrong party.
Oh, come on, stop it. You're the only Owen Layton in the directory.
Well, that doesn't mean very much.
Hey, what is this? What are you trying to do?
Well, I'm simply trying to find out who you are and why you think you know me.
Hey, wait a minute. Is there someone there with you? Is that what all the doll talks about?
No, I'm alone.
Well, then why the big act? Oh, now listen, Owen. I told you not to try any of that shipboard romance stuff on me. I won't stand for it.
Did you say shipboard romance?
You heard me. I warned you that I wasn't interested in a friendly little kiss at the gangplank kind of stuff.
Listen, you're not talking about the ship you mean isn't the Empress.
Of course it's the Empress.
Gerald, you idiot.
Huh? Oh, what did you say?
I said, forgive me, I'm just so mixed up about things right now.
You can't be so upset that you'd forget about me. Besides, from the way you talked about your wife, she didn't mean a thing to you.
Look, Sheila, I can't talk anymore right now.
You're not brushing me off that easily. Owen, I warn you.
No, I'm not trying to brush you off. It's just that I'm having visitors, Sheila. Important people, business.
All right, tomorrow then. Early tomorrow.
I'm not sure I can make it tomorrow either. I may have to go out of town. There are things to settle regarding my wife's estate.
Well, there are things to settle, all right. Between us, lover.
Oh, God. Dear God, he's ruined everything. Everything. Pick it up. Pick up that phone, you miserable...
Hello?
Gerald, it's your brother.
Oh, hi, Owen. How are you?
Never better. Never better.
What's the matter? You don't sound well.
Well, why shouldn't I be well? I just had a lovely chat with a no-doubt charming young lady.
What?
Her name is Sheila. Isn't that a lovely name, Sheila?
Uh-oh.
Is that name familiar to you?
Now, Owen, before you say anything else, Owen, will you listen to me?
Yes, that's why I'm calling, to listen to you. To see if there's anything you can say, anything at all, that will mitigate my intention of coming right over there and strangling you.
Now, you've got to understand how it was, Owen. I was a prisoner in that stateroom, a virtual prisoner.
Yes. And that was the idea. I told you never to leave that room. Never to so much as poke your ugly head out of the door.
Well, it was easy enough for the first day, Gerald, but after almost 24 hours of that,
How many other women did you take up with?
Owen, she was the only one, absolutely the only one I had anything to do with.
And if I know you, you had plenty to do with her.
Well, I couldn't live like a hermit, for Pete's sakes.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. I can't. You knew how important it was to convince everyone that you were me.
But I did that, Owen. I told her I was you.
My, that was clever.
No. She thinks I am you, Owen. Now, look, the fact that she telephoned you tonight, doesn't that prove it?
Oh, yes, that proves it completely.
Owen, I was really going crazy in that tiny room, so I took just one little stroll on deck one night.
Yes, and met Sheila.
I swear that I never knew she'd try to get in touch with me.
Your girlfriend, Sheila, is in New York right now. She's demanding to see me. You. Me. What I mean is she's read about Harriet's death. She knows that you... she knows that I... Well, she knows that Owen Layton is free and unencumbered.
and will soon be very, very rich.
Oh, gee, I'm glad to hear that, Owen.
Shut up! Your friend Sheila isn't going to give up that easily. She's going to track me down. She's going to try to renew our little shipboard romance. And do you know what will happen when she does?
What?
Think about it, Gerald. She's going to take one look at me, and I'll be cooked, roasted, fried. She'll know I wasn't aboard the Empress. She'll know that she spent all that glorious week with another man. And how long do you suppose it'll take for her to put two and two together?
Owen, couldn't you put her off? Couldn't you keep her from seeing you?
How?
Well, if you could leave town, if you could get away.
Yes, it's the only thing that's occurred to me, too. If I left at once...
You could always go back to Paris. You always said it's your favorite city. And guess what? I saw in the papers that the Empress is sailing again tomorrow for Le Havre.
For the first time in my life, I wasn't looking forward to a sea voyage. But I knew that my idiotic younger brother had left me no other choice. The minute I was off the phone with him, I was on again, this time to my very obliging travel agent, who told me that passage aboard the Empress was indeed possible. But for the first time in my shipboard travels, I couldn't get a stateroom. Couldn't even do better than B deck. But it was an indignity I was forced to accept. This time, my cabin steward wasn't an amiable gentleman like Mr. Pawkins, but a gruff, uncommunicative type who made no promises of devoted service. But then I wouldn't require much service, for one thing. I no longer needed my bandages and crutches. As far as the world is concerned, my troublesome gout was healed.
Pardon me, sir.
Yes?
Aren't you the gentleman who sailed with us a couple of weeks ago? That Pawkins chap?
Oh, yes, that's right. You were the officer who helped me find the steward.
Yes, everything worked out all right there?
Yes, everything went fine. Unfortunately, I couldn't get such good accommodations this trip.
That's a shame, sir. But then I don't think we'll have as easy a crossing of it this time.
Why not?
Oh, a bit of rough weather ahead, they say.
Oh, fine. That's all I need. But rough weather ahead or not, at 4 that afternoon, the Empress pulled slowly away from the pier, and I admit that I breathed a heavy sigh of relief. That evening, I was taking a nap before dinner when someone knocked on my door.
Who is it? It must be an unfriendly neighborhood steward. Yeah?
Hello. I'm sorry.
Oh, was there something you wanted, miss?
Well, I've made a mistake. I thought this was Mr. Layton's cabin.
Well, it is. I'm Mr. Layton.
Oh, but you're not Mr. Owen Layton. That's the party I was looking for.
But I am Owen Layton.
Well, that's an interesting coincidence. I mean, that two people would have the same names and even look a little bit alike. Although, the Owen Layton, I mean, is quite a bit younger.
I don't know what in the world you're talking about.
I saw your name on the passenger list, but the man I mean... Well, he's about your height, and he has a beard like yours, but he's... Well, he's not you.
Well, and who are you?
My name's Sheila. Sheila Ross.
Sheila.
I met Owen Layton 2 weeks ago, right on this ship. And now suddenly there's another Owen Layton going the other way that... Oh, there's something very fishy going on here.
You're mistaken. I swear you're mistaken.
Listen, Mr. Whatever your name is, I don't know what this is all about. I don't know why there are two Owen Laytons going back and forth on this ship.
Well, what's so strange about that? I mean, why are you going back and forth?
Me? Because I have to. Because it's my job. I'm a social director.
You mean you work on the Empress?
That's right. And right now... I'm going to work on finding out what this is all about.
I stood rooted to the cabin floor, listening to the melancholy sound of the ship's whistle, warning the seas ahead that we were on our way, heading straight for troubled waters.
As you have heard, Owen Layton's perfect murder had the customary
imperfection. But at least he'll be able to enjoy one last ocean voyage before the authorities send him up the river. Isn't it nice to see justice triumph? Oh, beg your pardon, to hear justice triumph. You'll hear more out of me when I return shortly.
Ever had a tall, frosty glass of Amplitude? Well, if your beer is Budweiser, you've had it often. Amplitude is a fancy word for the entire taste phenomenon, the total experience of flavor. Next time you take a healthy swallow of Bud, watch what happens. Think about the sensations you're experiencing. Notice how the flavor of Bud comes on nice and easy. Not too strong, not too quick, just right. Notice the clean, crisp togetherness of Bud's taste. Everything in perfect balance, with no single element jumping out at you. And there'll be no aftertaste either, no hanging on. And you'll be refreshed and ready for another glassful. Actually, Bud drinkers have been experiencing Amplitude for years. But they never phrase it that way. They just say, Budweiser. And that says it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Look, let's put an end to all this gloomy-sounding stuff you've been getting so much of lately. Income tax is behind us, spring is here, Aaron's hit number 715, and there is even reason for hope with the gasoline thing. It's in this new spirit that I'd like to talk to you about buying a new car. It's a small car, one you can judge sanely, and not just in terms of how many miles per gallon it gives you. The car is a Buick Apollo. Like any self-respecting small car, it is economical. It's got a six-cylinder engine and a 21-gallon gas tank, which combine to give Apollo good gas economy and great range. But Apollo can also seat six passengers, and it has the kind of smoothness, quietness, and interior comfort that you'd expect of a Buick. Okay, you're looking for a car, and you think it should be small. Well, Buick has the car, Apollo. But don't buy it because it's small. Buy it because it's a Buick.
We hope you enjoyed tonight's voyage. We hope you'll be aboard next time the CBS Radio Mystery Theater takes you on a trip to all points mysterious. As you know, we have every means of transport available to us, from ships to trains to planes . And isn't it wonderful to realize that we didn't use a drop of gas or oil? Our cast included Stotz Cotsworth, Earl Hammond, Bryna Rayburn, Dan Ocko, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines, Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser, and the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
CBS News coming up shortly on KIXI. CBS News next on KIXI, AM and FM. In Seattle, it's 12 midnight.
CBS News. In about 6 hours, President Nixon is scheduled to leave Washington on a Mideast trip, which has been criticized by some senators as being blatantly political and useless. I'm Ann Crosman, reporting on the CBS radio network. On the day before Mr. Nixon's 10-day tour of Mideast capitals, Democratic Senator Henry Jackson and Republican Senator Edward Brooke both took the president to task for making such a trip, Jackson calling the trip more cosmetic and ceremonial than substance, and saying it doesn't make much sense since Secretary of State Kissinger has just spent a month there. Senator Edward Brooke calling the Mideast trip patently political and saying it will not serve a real useful purpose. Both White House and State Department officials are publicly denying any connection between the president's trip and his Watergate troubles. The president received strong support yesterday in Washington at a luncheon organized by the Committee for Fairness to the President. And Connie Chung was there.
President Nixon again vowed he will only leave office when his term ends in 1977 and will do so, he said, quote, with our heads high. As the president spoke, he was interrupted several times by standing ovations and cheers of support.
I can assure you, my friends, looking back over these past 5 years, that a strong American presidency is essential if we are to have peace in the world. And I can assure you that with your support, I shall do nothing that will weaken this office while I am holding this office.
The president also mentioned his trip to the Middle East, saying he is embarking on a long, difficult, and very important journey where all the problems have not been solved, but where an era of peace can be built. Connie Chung, CBS News, Washington.
The latest on Vice President Ford in a minute.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love. But give your allergy to contact.
Now listen carefully, because this message may surprise you. There is an ingredient that can effectively help block pollen's bad effect on your system. Sneezing, sniffling, drips, itchy red watery eyes. It's the antihistamine most prescribed by allergy specialists, and it's an ingredient in Contac. Surprising, yes, but the true wonder of Contac is how our tiny time pills keep this antihistamine working, helping up to 12 hours per capsule, all day, all night. Allergy is our business, too.
Give your hand to a friend. Give your heart to your love.
But give your allergy to Contact. Take Contact only when needed, only as directed.
Vice President Ford was in Cleveland yesterday to address the National Conference of Christians and Jews, and he discussed some problems confronting Americans. Phil Jones reports.
The vice president did not mention Watergate or the Symbionese Liberation Army specifically, but both were on his mind. He deplored the outcry against the police in the recent Los Angeles shootout with the Symbionese Liberation Army. Said Ford, the outlaws were killed, but the doomsayers arrived at a distorted conclusion that the outlaws were the innocent victims and the police and society were the offenders. Hinting at Watergate problems back in Washington, Ford said, the morality of politicians and of government itself reflects the morality of the cross-section of people who go to the polls. And Ford concluded, it is immoral to condemn crime by individuals in the government, but to condone crime by revolutionaries in California. Ford observed, we are living in an age of sweeping generalizations that would blur the choice of free people. But he said, we cannot write off an entire administration or an entire political party by a sweeping generalization about individual wrongdoing. Phil Jones, CBS News, with the vice president in Cleveland.
Nobody was hurt last night when a tornado touched down in Big Rapids, Michigan. There was some damage reported. Bodies of victims in Saturday's tornadoes are still being pulled out of the rubble in the northeastern part of Oklahoma. In all, 12 people are known dead in Oklahoma, and 6 are known dead from tornadoes in Emporia, Kansas. Damage estimates about $40 million. No reports of any injuries last night when a natural gas pipeline blew up in the Virginia countryside about 60 miles south of Washington, D.C. Flames shot hundreds of feet into the air. The fire finally burned itself out after workmen shut off the gas valves. Firefighters now are putting out a small brush fire that was caused by the flames. More after this.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablets?
No, sinus medicine. Helps the headache and the pressure.
Oh, you mean sign-off.
Exactly.
Exactly right. When sinus flares up with congestion and pain, insist on sign-off tablets. Sign-off delivers a full dose of pure aspirin plus a sinus drainer. Sign-off helps sinus pain while you drain. Use only as directed.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign-off.
Exactly.
Sign-off. The sinus medicine's in the bright red box.
A teenage girl in Belfast has been killed in a car bomb explosion at a racetrack outside the city. 12 other people were hurt, 3 of them seriously. In Britain, the Duke of Gloucester, the last surviving brother of King George VI and the uncle of Queen Elizabeth, has died at his country home in Northamptonshire. A spokesman for Buckingham Palace says the 74-year-old Duke had been ill for a long time. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIX. I'm with the time now is 6 minutes past midnight.